Hey there, I'm Tal Zlotnitsky from Ignite IT Consulting. You know me from the Braving Business podcast, but when I'm not behind the mic, I'm helping tech startups and established companies ignite their full potential. I also help entrepreneurs and businesses in distress reset for success. With over three decades of entrepreneurial success, I bring hands-on experience to drive growth, navigate turnarounds, raise capital, and lead through innovation. Whether it's executive coaching or strategic transformation, I'm here to turn your business challenges into success stories. Visit igniteitconsulting.com and let's spark that change together. That's igniteitconsulting.com. Your journey to business brilliance starts now.
And one last quick thing. If you enjoyed this episode, please stay on after the show to learn more about the Braving Business podcast and other great episodes for you to discover. And now, let's get the show started. Well, hello there.
PJ, how are you?
How are you doing, buddy? You look awesome.
Hey, do I really?
You do.
Maybe it's the new shirt. I got it on Temu for like $4. Do you like it?
Wow. Hey, fast fashion's killing the U.S. economy.
It only took like 3 months to get here, and it's probably child labor. I feel terrible about it. In fact, I should stop right here and take it off.
It's sewn with children's tears. Yeah, it's pretty bad. But it comes from another country. My kids just left. This weekend, I knew you were going to ask about it. That's why I just jumped right to it because I'm excited. My kids went on a school trip to Europe. So they're there for the next 11 days.
Where in Europe are they?
They're going to Paris and then Germany and then Switzerland and then Austria. So it's quite the trip. It's quite the trip. And then afterwards,
sounds awesome.
My wife, Kara, and I, you know, Kara, we're going to travel out, pick them up. And Kara secured tickets to Taylor Swift in Wembley Stadium that she and our youngest are going to go to. I know, way cheaper than they were here in Chicago.
I'm not surprised by that. That's amazing. My son's in England too. I think you know that, right?
I heard. So we should, how long is he there for?
He's been there. He's finishing up a year abroad. So he's going to be there another month or so.
All right.
I was supposed to go meet him, but I'm actually, it looks like I'm going to India.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well,
I know. You know what? I've never been.
If you want me to bring a care package to your son, let me know.
I appreciate it. Darnielle, have you traveled anywhere lately?
I literally just got back, not international though, got back from Charlotte, and I'm heading to Mexico in a couple of weeks. So I'm excited.
Nice. Where in Mexico?
Playa del Carmen for a little R&R. Yeah.
Gotcha. Very good. It's been a minute since I've been there, but that's fun.
Drinks with umbrellas. PJ. Never bad with that.
That is the truth. Why don't we introduce our lovely guest and get the show on the road?
You mean Dr. Darnielle Jervy-Harmon? I can't wait.
I do indeed.
So today's guest, everyone, is Dr. Darnielle Jervy-Harmon, CEO of the multi-million dollar coaching and consulting brand Incredible One Enterprises. A two-time Inc. 5000 selectee, Darnielle is a seven-time best-selling author, the creator of five powerful business systems, and the host of the Move to Millions podcast. Her latest book, Move to Millions, encapsulates her method of helping clients quickly cross the million-dollar revenue mark while deepening their spiritual connections, something we're definitely going to dig into in a little bit. Over the past 10 years, she has helped her clients generate more than $500 million in sales and hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. However, Dr. Harmon's path to success, as you've always heard on this show, was far from easy. Growing up with drug-addicted parents and a mother who went to prison, she was the only one of her mother's seven children to graduate from high school, attend college, and achieve millionaire status. And as inspiring as that sounds, Darnielle's entrepreneurial journey was far from a fairy tale. It includes bankruptcy, failed launches, bad hires, and losing big clients, demonstrating how critical resilience and determination is to success, something we have heard again and again on this podcast. So let's dive into her inspiring story. Dr. Harmon, thank you for joining us today on the Braving Business podcast.
I am so excited to be here with both of you, and I am looking forward to a powerful conversation.
Woo.
Well, that's great. Likewise, you have an incredible story. And when your team reached out to us about having you on, I read up on you and I was like, wow, this is a guest that fits us like a glove.
and I'm excited to chat with you. And I think this is going to be a great episode. Let's start from the very beginning. You had a rough start. Talk to us about that. What was it like being you as a child?
You know, being me as a child wasn't the tough part. It was everything that was going on around me, right? Like, my mom tells the story that she didn't know she was pregnant, and both of my parents were addicts, heroin, then crack when crack became a thing in the 1980s. And so she didn't know she was pregnant. She was, you know, doing her regular thing, went to the doctor for something else and learned that she was carrying me, at which point she stopped in her defense. And it was really early. This is 1975. So there wasn't a lot of data about what might be happening if you are pregnant and getting high, right? And so the doctors were not sure. They were leery about what might happen. Some reports had just started to come up about the effects of smoking cigarettes. Mm. Here we are with heroin, which is an entirely different substance. So anyway, doctor said, we don't know what's going to happen, but it's possible that she's going to get here and there are going to be things wrong with her. So we just kind of want to prepare you for that. There was not anything cognitively wrong with me, but I was born into a very chaotic situation in the projects of Wilmington, Delaware. Lots of drama between my mom and my dad, who ended up getting divorced when I was two. And we stayed with my mother until my mom's home got raided during my 8th birthday party and she went to jail. And so then we went to live with my father. I think it really started to get even more chaotic and living with my father and my stepmother because we ruined her fairy tale. She didn't want us there. And all of a sudden, he inherited these three kids that weren't part of the dream that he had promised her. And it was pretty rough just being the stepchild. I think about there's this Langston Hughes poem. I can't even think of the name of it right now, but the part of the poem says, they send me to eat in the kitchen when the company comes, right? I am the darker brother. That was how I was raised. That's how I grew up. Although we were with my father, because my stepmother didn't really want us there, we felt like we were an afterthought. And so that was really challenging, as you might imagine. Trying to figure out how to navigate that has been interesting.
Wow. Wow. I can't even imagine an 8th grade birthday party and instead of a clown showing up, it's the police and they're serious, right?
And 8 years old, not 8th grade, years old.
Sorry. That's even worse. I'm sorry about that.
That's even worse. Oh, yeah.
My gosh. So you've gone through a lot, right? And clearly resilient, and God bless you. I think that's amazing. Amazing. So you have all this happened to you. Where did you see the seed of entrepreneurialism growing? Like, how did you, were there other people in your orbit, other business owners, other mentors that kind of inspired you towards, oh, hey, I can actually write my own ticket?
Not as a child. There probably were entrepreneurs, but I wasn't paying attention to that. I was really blessed in the sense that my teachers and my guidance counselors, they saw my promise and potential and they really honed it. So they, you know, gave me stipends for scholarships and, you know, helped me to get into special programs so that they could really hone that natural gift that was on the inside of me. By the time I got to college, I started to see the seeds of, oh, wow, there might be something else. Although that wasn't the path I took. I was going to law school, changed my mind at the last minute, and then decided to go work in corporate America. And was 12 years into my career when I decided that there had to be more to life than sitting behind someone else's desk. I was engaged to be married the very first time. I don't know if we're going to go in that direction in this episode or not. But the very first time I was engaged to be married, 3 months before our wedding, my first ex-fiance confessed that he had gotten an older woman in our church pregnant.
Oh.
And after about 3 months of me moping, one of my good girlfriends was like, enough is enough. And she took me to a Mary Kay skincare class. And that was really when entrepreneurship became a thing, a whole thing. The thought that I could, you know, at that point, and it's really popular today, have a side hustle. I could make some extra money and I could do something that would uplift me and other women at the same time. It really got me out of my slump and it got me to thinking. And one of the things about a Mary Kay Cosmetics, any direct selling company, is they douse you with personal development. So it was for the first time in my life, I learned about mindset and success mindset and growth mindset and all of those things that plant seeds that really let you understand the significance of your promise and your potential makes you to think beyond sitting behind someone else's desk, makes you think about it. You know, that kind of thing started to change.
Mary Kay was your first entrepreneurial foray, but it wasn't a smooth journey. As I understand it, you ended up having a bankruptcy. Was that part of the Mary Kay story, or was that after the fact?
No, it was kind of after. So Mary Kay was, it was kind of good when it was good. And let me tell you what I love about Mary Kay, and all of the business people will definitely appreciate this. It's a proven business model. Part of the reason why I ended up filing bankruptcy in my own business is because it wasn't a proven business model. I followed the formula produced the result. When I sent my car back to Mary Kay, because I was at another proverbial crossroad and was like, okay, I did it again. I'm sitting behind someone else's desk. This isn't really what I'm supposed to do with my life. And decided to start my own company is really where the turmoil came in. I didn't market enough. I didn't charge enough. And eventually the bottom fell out. There wasn't enough money coming in. So I started spending my savings. One thing led to another. Ramen noodles, peanut butter and jelly. Need a job. Don't want to live in my car. Got to file bankruptcy. So it was like this whirlwind of bad decisions that translated into having to go back to work to figure out how to sustain myself so I could figure out how to have my own business, because it was very different than what I did in Mary Kay.
I don't want to rush through some of the points you just made about that led you to failing, because I think that some of what we aspire to do here is help people identify red flags that should prompt them to evaluate what their choices are.
Yeah.
So if we can slow down just a bit and go backwards, it sounded like you said you weren't charging enough. You were digging into your savings. What happened there? What did you learn from this experience?
I love this question because I get this question a lot. When you are an employee and the average entrepreneur, their first foray into having their own business, they still think like an employee. Employees make $25, $35, $50, $60, $70 an hour. And that feels like a lot of money because most of their expenses are subsidized by their employer. Well, when you're self-employed, you're paying that 15.7% self-employment tax yourself, right? So what was $50 or $60 an hour that amounts to $100 and whatever dollars at the end of the year is far from that when you're an entrepreneur. So I came out and I'm like, okay, I'm going to be a coach. I'm going to charge $100 a session. It sounded like a lot of money. Yeah, it wasn't. And so, you know, and I'm working with clients and I'm helping them get these tremendous results. Like I think about an early person, Chris was her name. She paid me $297. I hate those sevens on the end to this day. I spent 90 minutes with her. And from that 90-minute session, she went on to create $11,000. Darnielle had $300. I couldn't even be happy for her because, right. But it was my fault. I didn't know how to charge based on the value, right? And it was so good that she came back and hired me again. I got a little bit wiser. I charged her $2,500. We spent a day together. She went off and made $120,000. So at the end of one day and 90 minutes, she had $131,000 and I had about $2,800. It was a hard lesson to learn, and it was important that I learn it, right? And I today teach this formula for pricing, because what most people do is they think like for a widget or, you know, a product. They're like, okay, these are my direct costs. This is my overhead and this is my profitability, right? And that's it. Well, you cannot do that when you're selling services. You have to add so much more in, and you have to think about your profitability in terms of the value associated with what you're going to teach them. It's the old adage, if I give you a fish, you only eat for one day, but if I teach you how to fish, you'll eat for the rest of your life. I taught Chris how to fish, but I didn't have anything to show for it in comparison to what she did.
So we're going off on a tangent a little bit, but this is so awesome. In any event. I apologize because I find it so fascinating what you've just raised. And I do think that learning how to price is extraordinarily complex. It is not, a lot of people go with their gut. And mm-hmm. to your point, it feels right. This seems like the right number. Or if I ask for more than this, I'm going to come across as greedy, or they might say no and then I'll have nothing. how do you right size pricing? I mean, because, you know, when you, before you have that conversation, you don't know potentially, you don't, you may not necessarily know right out of the gate exactly what value you're going to produce. You may not necessarily know how they're going to turn that into results, because you don't have necessarily influence over their commitment and their willingness to follow through, et cetera. So how do you, what is the formula? I mean, what do you take into consideration when you price your services?
Yeah. So, and I would disagree with you, because I think that if you are a service provider in the marketplace, there are some things you should know. Yes, maybe you cannot determine whether or not the person is going to implement. As a coach or consultant, the world that I'm in, right? I don't do the work for them, but I help them to curate and create a plan that will get them to the result if they're willing to take the actions. And then depending upon how they hire me, they can hire me for accountability measures that increases the likelihood that they do what I know is going to work for them. But I bring to the table a sense of understanding about their business, their industry, their ideal client, and what they're looking to accomplish, because I'm not a theorist. Because at this particular point in time, 16 years in business, I've worked with thousands of entrepreneurs and small business owners who work in service-based business. And because of that, I do have a track record of success, and I know what is likely to happen. And because of those things, I can charge more than a person who might be just starting. So, but what I would say to anybody who's listening is I wouldn't recommend that you charge for your time. Time is a commodity. We're all going to run out of time. I would recommend instead that you charge for the results, because the result is what's going to make the difference for them. And you'll, over time, maybe if it's the very first person you're working with, I don't believe that that's the person listening to this episode, this podcast, but if it's the very first person you're working with and you've never done this work before, then yeah, you might not know. But if you worked with three people or five people, you want to look for the common thread and what you were able to help them to do and what are the results that came out of that, and then associate a value with that. I like to think about over the next 5 years, if I work with them and I teach them this today, and if for just the next 5 years, they hone in and do what it is that I'm recommending they do, what might the possibility potential be for them from a revenue generation standpoint? And that is factored in. It's not the sum total of how I charge. I don't believe in pulling numbers out of the air. I do think about my direct costs. Those are the things that cannot be avoided if I'm going to perform this service. I do think about my general and administrative costs. Those are the charges for the people who support me as I support this client. I do think about a portion of my overhead, because those things have to be paid no matter how many clients I have. So I'm going to charge every client a portion of my overhead so that I can remain in business. I do think about the active time that I spend in delivering that service for them. And I think about the value of what it is that they are going to gain over a period of time because I showed up, because I know what I'm doing, because I didn't theorize them and I gave them a proven methodology, framework, process that they could utilize to produce a result. And then I add profit on top of that. Just like in a retail transaction, if I walk in a store and I buy some vitamins, they are not the wholesale price. They've added profit on the top of that. I'm going to add profit too. And I'm typically going to recommend that you add 60 to 80% profit on top of whatever it all comes out to that you charge. That's so you can pay your taxes. That's so you have money left over. And so that you can actually live off of your business. That's where I messed up in the beginning. I was charging $100 a session without giving any credence to what would happen beyond that session, because I was just charging for my time and not for the result.
Wow. All right. So first of all, thank you for that. that was a literal fire hose of information. So, listeners, you might want to like check back to this point in the old podcast, because you're going to want to re-listen to all that, because that was a brilliant, expose on how to take, even though your origin story is emotional, your approach takes all the emotion out of it, and it's all very functional. It's very pragmatic, and it's about not commoditizing yourself and your time, but really, really looking at what the overall value is and not selling yourself short. And I think that's brilliant. Really, really cool stuff. So,
I agree. I think that's a masterclass on pricing we just heard. And I would completely concur with PJ. Our audience should rewind here. You need to re-listen to what Darnielle just said, because that was incredibly valuable. Yeah. Incredibly valuable. And if you get nothing more out of this podcast today than that, it will add zeros to your bottom line.
Yeah.
So thank you for that, Darnielle. That was wonderful.
It was
wonderful.
Absolutely.
So you learn, obviously you've learned, right? You've taken that emotional premise, that drive of what the heck did Chris just make, and you kind of launched yourself forward. But you've also, that's not the only lesson that you've learned in our interview. You've talked about failed launches. You talked about bad hires. I've had both of those, which are, as Tal had kind of mentioned before, they're like very gut-wrenching. Those are two of the most common gut-wrenching experiences of an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
What was that like for you? How did you navigate through all that?
Well, it's not fun. Okay. Let's just say, I mean, I've had more than one failed launch. You would think you learned the lesson, but sometimes you don't. And you think you know what people want. And so, early on, actually, I'm going to talk about something that happened 2 years ago. So 2 years ago, I did a launch. I created a course because one of my secret superpowers are live events. I love holding live events. We've learned how to make them extremely profitable. I just did one a couple of weeks ago at the time of this recording, and we generated more than $1 million in 3 days. Amazing. Well, I decided to take a course. So actually, one of my clients was like, you know what? You're so amazing at live events. You should create a course. You should teach people how to do this. People are going to want to learn this. And I was like, okay, great. You know what? I'll create a course. Created the course. The course is amazing. I decide that instead of just teaching the course, though, or just offering the course, I'm going to create a whole coaching program to go along with it. This is where I went wrong. Go through the process of launching it. We get, a couple hundred people to register. They show up. I do my ditty, go through all the things, get everyone all excited and talk about the course and the coaching program and the investment, and crickets. No one buys. Now, the good news is I hadn't yet created all of the things, right? I always say you sell it before you create it. But it was just this, okay, people are going to be so excited because one client who loves me, who has access to me because she's in a coaching program, is like, you need a coaching program. You have to know your people. So in this particular launch, what could have been, and it was our fourth quarter, was our December launch. Normally, our fourth quarter launch produces at least $500,000 for us. So it's the end of the year. We don't have an extra $500,000 coming in. In fact, we have no money coming in because no one signed up. And you go through the range of emotions, right? Like, so first, you're like, woe is me. I suck, right? You do all the things. We're human. I'm human. And I'm like, gosh, I got it so wrong. And then we start looking at the data. And I realize that some of the messaging, totally the mechanism that we use to talk about the course, wasn't the right thing. Like, we realized we rushed the gun. This wasn't what we were planning to do. We switched gears and it set us up to not accomplish what we wanted to accomplish. And so the big lesson for me from that is always let the data speak. You alluded to it earlier, PJ, the emotion of, oh my gosh, this is a great idea. This is going to be amazing. Is useless if there's no data that corroborates the emotion. We had emotion and no data. And so it ended up being not the greatest, but 60 days later, we made some changes. We launched it in a different way, just as a course, and we did six figures. So you have to be willing to course correct. I couldn't, cry like someone stole my bike for a long time. I had to get over it and get onto the data and figure out how we could course correct and turn this around, because that was revenue that didn't hit the business for the end of the year, but it wouldn't be okay coming into the new year that happened.
So it sounds interesting that someone gave you an idea, it prompted you, and that's often, by the way, is how it goes. You either, whether it's how you're starting your business or where you take the businesses, it's oftentimes a well-intended suggestion or idea, and it is up to you to reflect thoroughly about whatever it is that's been suggested to you and ask yourself, where does this recommendation fit with who I view myself to be and what I'm trying to do?
Yep.
And don't move too quickly. And, you know, it's somewhat counterintuitive because if you're a small business, one of your greatest advantages is you're nimble.
Correct.
It's also one of your greatest disadvantages. You're so nimble that you can very easily misfire. And a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
That's great advice. Let's talk about something that I know matters to you, and you've spoken about it, and you've written about it, you've spoken about it, and that's the importance of not viewing oneself as a victim. And you just kind of talked about that now.
Yeah.
You misfired. It's common to feel shitty about it. But you lift yourself up, and that's something that you've done repeatedly.
Yeah.
I'd love to understand a little bit about how you develop and maintain this mindset. Like what are some core principles that allow you to lift yourself back up?
Yeah. I mean, first and foremost, if it doesn't kill you, like if I'm still here, then I did not fail. I think failure is death. And I know that probably sounds really extreme, but that's what I think. Like failure is I'm not breathing anymore. If I'm still breathing, I can course correct. I can pivot. I can do something different. I just feel like I learned very early, like it's not win or loss. It's win or learn. And because that's always been my philosophy, and maybe it's because I was born with drugs in my system, but there's nothing wrong with me. You know, maybe it's because I've got seven brothers and sisters, but I graduated from high school on a full scholarship. You know, I mean, I have all of these moments where I've defied statistics and I've broken belief barriers. So I'm too dumb to doubt that there's anything that could really take me out except for the finality of death. And because I think that way, it served me extremely well because I can always change. Like nothing is final. Like it just, I don't know. I don't know how else to say it, guys. Like nothing else is final. It's like, oh, that sucked. Okay, great. You know, have a little moment. If I need to, I am a human being. If you cut me, I will bleed. But I never dwell on it because I can make a change and I'm brilliant and I can try something different. And guess what? Even if that doesn't work, I still don't lose. And so it's always just been my philosophy. And because of that, it doesn't matter what's happened.
So it sounds like positive self-talk. I'm hearing that. I'm hearing elements of positive self-talk. I'm hearing elements of clear resilience, but I would call it, you know, optimism is probably too plain of a way to say it. I actually think you have a vision for where you believe you can wind up. And that vision is optimistic, but the optimism is just one factor among many that allow you to be resilient. So positive self-talk, have a vision for where you're going to go and believe. And those three things I think are, sounds to me like those are the three things that led you out of whatever moments in your
moving.
Life have felt like setbacks. Yeah.
Just keep moving. Like, I believe that there's no such thing as a setback, right? A stumbling block is a stepping stone. Mm-hmm. And so if I can find a way to find the light in this dark moment, then I can pivot and get something different. And it, for entrepreneurs that are out there, like you mentioned resiliency a lot. Like we have to be resilient. We have to be innovative. We have to be creative. We have to be in community with other people so that we don't have those moments that spiral us down into this whole other place. But instead, we can lift ourselves out of that moment that might feel like despair. But yeah, I mean, it's just nothing is that serious if I'm still here.
Well, one of the other things I love, though, and I don't know if you've taken a lot of time to do this or not, but you clearly know yourself, right? Like, I think you've taken some part in your life, whether it's, you know, Tal does a lot of, he does daily meditations, which I think is awesome. I don't know what your normal repertoire is, but you clearly know yourself. And I think that it's very refreshing to hear someone say, well, I'm brilliant and I'm going to do this. And it's not brilliant like you're trying to boast or be one up on anyone. It's just a statement of fact that you know your stuff, you're smart, and you're going to get going. So I love that. So that self-reflection, I think, is something that we as humans don't do enough of. And I think it's just very powerful. As an example, through you, that you know, it lends itself very well to you right here.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
No problem. Let's talk to the Move to Millions method. Like, could you explain this name? Love the name, by the way. Could you explain this to us, how you got the name, how you developed this approach, and what are some of the key principles of this methodology?
So I have, which we alluded to earlier, I am a God girl. My spirituality is very important to me. I do not separate them. I quote the Bible like people quote Think and Grow Rich. And so for a couple of years, I was praying for my movement. Like, what am I here to do? I'm doing work, but I don't know that I'm really making an impact. And then eventually I heard in my spirit, Move to Millions. And MOVE is an acronym. It stands for Mastery, Operational Obedience, Vision, and Execution. And the body of work that I'm a business coach and consultant. And so I work directly with entrepreneurs. You know, our clients come to us at six figures and they're on a plateau and they want to scale and sustain businesses that'll generate millions. And they want to do it with grace and ease instead of hustle and grind. And they want to do it without sacrificing their family, their faith, their freedom, and their ability to have fun as an entrepreneur. And so over the last 10 years or so, as I've been coaching and consulting, I've just been paying attention to the key themes that run through the work that we do with our clients. And so as a result of that, we created a methodology that helps them to predict their success. And so the pillars in the framework, there are seven: strategy, sales, systems, support, success mindset, spirituality, and self-care. And so what I've come to learn is that when we're looking at these seven things in a business, we can create a formula, if you will allow the CEO to build a business that serves them with everything getting proper attention and being set up in a way that they can ultimately create systems, infrastructures, and procedures in place so that they don't have to be the only one working in their business, right? Our clients often come to us as a solopreneur, or them and one team member, and we turn them into a CEO while helping to build out the infrastructure that's going to support and sustain their business over time.
It's fascinating. And I think that, you know, I know that you've helped over 70 clients become million-dollar CEO. So if you're out there and you're listening and you have a business that's in the hundreds of thousands and you're thinking about what's it going to take to turn it into $1 million, you could probably not do a whole lot better than Darnielle. And so I'd recommend you reach out to her.
Yeah.
You just talked about these, I don't know how many S's there were there, but there were several.
Seven.
What's interesting to me, and in this podcast, we often talk about the common traits of people who succeed. And, you know, we thought today we'd change it up a bit and we'd actually focus on the most common traits of those who don't succeed. What are the missing ingredients from your experience of people who maybe had the potential, but just didn't get there?
Yeah. The first thing that just popped in was living in fear. I mean, it's all couched as mindset, but the fear of success or the fear of failure or the fear of the responsibility or the obligation to get to the next level. Like, I think consciously they may say, I want to make $1 million, but then they're afraid that if they do, they'll pay a lot of taxes, or you know, they might not actually accomplish what it is. I say that's the biggest one. And then the second is inaction, not taking the next step. Like, I believe God will give you more while you're moving than he ever will if you stand still. And sometimes all you need to do is to get in action, right? Think about the GPS. You can put the address, you can put your destination in, but until you start driving your car, it's not calculating. It's not taking your next step. And so I think that that's another one. And then I think the third thing that happens, and this goes back to mindset too, is undervaluing their significance, undercharging, right? I mean, businesses exist to create profit, and profit is how we keep score. But if you're not profitable in your business, you basically have a hobby. And there are a lot of people who, because they're afraid of everything you said earlier, Tao, like they'll be perceived as greedy, or if they charge too much, they won't get clients. All of these things are not actually true. I mean, how else can you explain that right now on the road somewhere, there's a Kia driving next to a Honda, driving next to a BMW, driving next to a Maserati, driving next to a Bentley. All technically do the same exact thing, but they all also have very different price points to do that thing. And so because we have all of these limited beliefs based on how we were raised, I believe that most of us, regardless of whether we came from money or not, because we're taught that money is taboo, you can't talk about it, you know, it's inappropriate or disrespectful, and people don't understand it. They don't understand what it is and how it relates to having a business. But if you don't understand money, then you limit your earning potential, which means that you basically have created a good job for yourselves. And if it's my job that I created or a job somebody else has created, I'd rather work for them because it's a whole lot less headaches than to be the person who's responsible to make all of the decisions, but to earn like I'm still an employee. And so those are probably the biggest mistakes that I see. Again, mindset, inaction, and then just allowing their limiting beliefs to take over and create fear. And I've seen a lot, but those are probably the biggest ones.
Your fear, your mention of fear really, really rang true. And Tal, I don't think I ever told you this, but I had a family member who was a quote unquote serial entrepreneur. And so he was really good at creating the idea and creating the company, like the gist, the bones. And, and he would get it to like the point where he's actually about to launch and then he'd scrap it. And I would be like, what are you doing? Like you have everything there. And, you know, it was always excuse after excuse, you know, oh, it's the market's not right. Da, 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 da. And I was always like, get your wheels in motion, right? As long as you have traction, you can go some direction. But if you're just sitting there, you're not going to go anywhere. And so that mention of fear, I think, is such an important thing to point out. I'm also going to point out that I think we should re-listen to this several times because you just keep, you keep dropping so many great points that I don't want to interrupt you all the time. And I know Tal is also like, wanting to jump in on a lot of things, but we don't want to like, you know, stop you from your flow because you really are giving a masterclass here. So we definitely appreciate it. Tal, did you have any points on what she just covered before I go to the next question?
I mean, they ring so true. My experience, and I also consult, and I've been an entrepreneur both for myself. I've experienced those moments where fear was paralyzing. And you, if you cannot overcome it, if you let that determine your actions, you've lost.
Yeah.
And fear is manifest in different ways, right? Some people fear investing. Well, gosh, I worked so hard for my money. And if I put in money into my business, their mindset is that it's throwing money away, which is a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
The right way to think about it, in my view, is return on investment. How much can you generate based on what you put in? And that's how you view the money that you're putting in. But that's not easy to do. And a lot of people struggle with that. I do think mindset and self-mastery are the things that separate successful people from unsuccessful people. And I also, you know, from the numerous guests that we've had that have told similar stories where they have experienced extreme lows and managed to get back up. You said, if you're alive, you just keep going. And that's, you know, that's one way to phrase a concept that I think is universal among successful people, which is you just don't quit. It doesn't mean you don't pivot. It doesn't mean that you don't adjust, but you don't quit. And, ultimately, if you just keep showing up, generally speaking, good things will happen to you. And I love the analogies. The analogy of the GPS is one of the best analogies I've ever heard. I've never heard it before.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's fantastic stuff. Let's pivot to your book, Move to Millions. It's what's interesting to me about this book, and you talked about being a God girl, which I love that. I love the way you phrased that. It's a book that combines business growth with spiritual depth. And I'd love to know, where has spirituality played a role for you in your life? Is that something that did you go there early? I mean, you certainly had enough challenges and enough difficulties in your life that having a higher power may well have been something that served you well. Or maybe you didn't have enough time or, you know, or even the ability to think about God yet at those early moments. So I'd love to know where you found faith. If that's not too personal to share.
No, absolutely.
And then, how do you balance, you know, your faith and business? Do you find them to be in tension with each other or a perfect continuation of one another?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was born and raised in the church, but I grew up religious. I now have a relationship with the creator of the universe today, which is very different. So I'm not really into the rituals and all of the do's and don'ts so much as I am into understanding who God is and experiencing the fullness of him. And so for me, there is no separation, right? I think most of us have heard the saying, we are human, we are spiritual beings having a human experience. And so for me, my spirituality is a natural extension of who I am. Now, did I always parade it in the marketplace? No. 2013 was really my, to borrow from the Bible, was my road to Damascus moment when Saul became Paul, where I just decided if I'm going to do this work, all of me needs to come to the forefront. And I felt very compartmentalized. I felt like, you know, I was a lover of God on the one hand, but then I was this corporate being who wasn't sensitive to what spirituality is. And so I decided to bridge the gap and bring them together. And it made the most amazing difference for me. And it carved out a niche of people to work with that was pretty amazing. And today I don't separate it. Everywhere I go, my spirituality goes with me. I am not afraid or I don't cower at the thought. And here's why. Our money says in God we trust. I mean, if you know about the foundations of the United States, our forefathers came here escaping religious persecution. We are not agnostic to God, right? Our money says in God we trust. And every politician, before they leave the stage, they say, "In God bless America," right? So because of that, I've made a decision that I'm not going to separate it, that I'm going to do it. I think that there's a tasteful way to do it. I don't hoop and holler. I don't bring a collection plate. I don't do any of those churchy things, but I create an environment for people to get in touch with who they are and the innermost parts of themselves and to invite them to explore how their spirituality might make them a better human, a better leader, a better CEO. And so when I say spirituality, and I'll wrap this up, I talk about things like surrender and alignment and forgiveness and embodiment and how those characteristics or those states of myself make me a better human, make me sensitive, make me empathetic, give me emotional intelligence, and allow me to show up in a way that serves and supports those that I've been called to serve in humanity. And so I feel like spirituality, it just makes me a better CEO. And it's a natural part of who we are. So to exclude it almost feels like we left something out.
Mic drop moment. I mean, honestly, yeah. That cannot be said any better.
Yeah.
There've been other guests on the podcast that have been faith-based. There are a couple, in particular that come to mind. Ray Higdon is one. I'm drawing a blank on his last name right now, and he's a friend of mine, which is embarrassing. So I won't say it. Carl Grant III, sorry. Fantastic human beings who really lead God-centered lives. And in general on this podcast, I don't preach. Everybody's got to make their own choices. I do find that if you don't have something other than yourself and your immediate, human challenges and aspirations, connecting you to the universe, it's a little bit harder, to get through life. And so whatever it is that you need to do to find something to connect to, I encourage you to do it. It's not common that I'm speechless, but honestly, PJ said it right. I mean, you're dropping one great piece of advice after another. So maybe it's appropriate that my next question is about advice, which is, what one piece of advice would you give to entrepreneurs that are facing their own challenges that you would have loved to have had when you were a much younger entrepreneur?
Yeah. Two things pop in. And the first thing is trust yourself. There are so many times where someone else tells you you're wrong or you can't. But I'd like to think that we are wise enough to know what is going to work for us, even when we don't have all the answers or have all the variables. And I think if I learned earlier in my journey to trust myself, I might have avoided some of the pitfalls that came up. So that would be the first thing. And then the second would be forgive yourself. Forgive yourself. Yes, you made a bad call. Yes, it turned into a failed launch. But guess what? It's not the end of the world, right? Forgive yourself. Dust yourself off. Learn the lesson that is to be learned. Calibrate the data. Create a new plan. Try it again. So trust yourself and forgive yourself.
You know, I can easily see why your live events are such a success, because I feel like I just went to church. And it was, I mean, it's...
I'm Jewish and I feel like I just went to church.
you're so, it's not like the, it's not what you're saying. It's how you're saying it, and, and your earnestness and your belief just shines through, and, it goes way past all pretext. It's just the spoke. It's almost like the spoken word, right? Like you're just talking the truth. And I just love that. So thank you. Thank you for allowing us to, what's the tithe anyway? but I mean, just fantastic stuff. So let's look ahead. So for your personal goals for Incredible One Enterprises, what are those? And you know, are you writing more books? Like what, you know, you're going to sell out a couple of stadiums. Like, do you need a sound guy? Like what are you doing? Like what's up?
Yeah, I want to do a new TED Talk called What Would Abundance Do? Mm. It's something that I've been noodling on since the top of the year. I did a keynote at a conference and it really took off. And so at my live event, we gave everybody What Would Abundance Do bracelets just to help all of us think from through an abundance lens instead of through a lack lens, right? Like, you're walking down a street and there's a person who's asking, do you have any change? What would abundance do? Abundance would give them change. Abundance wouldn't lie and say, I don't have any cash, because most of the time we do have cash, right? You're having a conversation with an employee and the employee wants a day off where there's nothing going on. Now, maybe your policy is that you need to give 2 weeks notice, but what would abundance do? Abundance would let them have the day off. Like, it's just a way to think. So I want to do a new TED Talk. And then I do have another book that I'm going to write. I'm not sure of the name of it just yet, but it is going to be all about this mindset stuff. Like, I really want to go deeper into money, mindset for money, neuroscience, metaphysics, spirituality, because I think money is spiritual. So I want to continue to deepen that work. And then as a company, we're right now building to our $100 million portfolio. So not just this company, but also me. I've already owned a few other companies. And so I want to continue to build our portfolio out. I'm looking for some companies where I don't have to work every single day, but I get to earn. Because I believe legacy is financial. And so I want to be able to leave the planet better. And as I said before we started recording, it's hard to be the change when you don't have any. So I want to have a lot of change so that I can be the change that I want to see in the world.
Amazing.
Our guest today, Dr. Darniel Gervy-Harmon.
Gervy. Darniel Gervy.
Okay. Because it's spelled with a J, but it's pronounced as a G, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. CEO of the multi-million dollar coaching and consulting brand, Incredible One Enterprises, 7-time best-selling author. And we can see why. She dropped a whole lot of wisdom on us today. And we do want to end with the fact that she's going to give away one copy of her book, a signed copy of that, to someone who writes into us at www.bravingbusiness.com, who tells us how their business will generate wealth for their family. So we want to understand what it is that you're going to do for your family with the wealth you're going to generate. Write to us and we will give away one copy of Darniel's book. Darniel, it's been such an honor to have you on. We hope to have you on again in the future. I'm sure that this episode will generate a lot of buzz and we're sure to get a lot of questions and people who are interested in reaching you. If people who are listening are interested in accessing you and your company, how would they do that?
They can go to movetomillions.com.
All right. Movetomillions.com. You heard it here in our show notes. We're also going to have your Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn. And I think your ex, formerly Twitter, handles. So you can reach and listen to Darnielle there as well. Darnielle, thank you so much for your time today.
So good.
To all our listeners and viewers, keep on braving business.
Thank you.
That was awesome.
And that's a wrap, folks. Like what you heard, want to support the show? Please follow our page on LinkedIn and Facebook. Visit us on YouTube. And please like and rate us on all of your favorite podcast streaming services. You can also see exclusive content, subscribe for free to our weekly blog, support our sponsors, and soon buy our merchandise at www.bravingbusiness.com. Thanks for being a part of our production. And we'll see you next time on the Braving Business Podcast.